Imagine all the obstacles a person might have to overcome if he were to walk the 2,900 miles from New York City to San Francisco. When he was asked to tell of his biggest hurdle, one man who accomplished this rare achievement mentioned a rather surprising difficulty. He said that the toughest part of the trip was not walking the steep slopes of the mountains, was not crossing hot, dry, barren stretches of desert. Instead, he said, the thing that came the closest to defeating me was the sand in my shoes. In the end, it's often the little things that determine whether we fail or whether we succeed. After some of the exiles of Judah had returned to their homeland after the captivity in Babylon, they finally began to rebuild the temple. Zechariah was one of the prophets who stirred them up to commit themselves to this work. They were warned not to look down on the effort. In Zechariah 4, verses 8 through 10, the text says, the word of the Lord came to me. The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple. His hands will also complete it. Then you will know that the Lord Almighty has sent me to you. This is God speaking through the prophet. And then he goes on to say, who dares despise the day of small things? Since the seven eyes of the Lord that range throughout the earth will rejoice when they see the chosen capstone or the plumb line, depending on translations, in the hand of Zerubbabel. Regarding the plumb line, another translation is perhaps a bit more helpful. It says, people will not be ashamed of the small beginnings, and they will be very happy when they see Zerubbabel with the plumb line measuring and checking the finished building. A plumb line is a string with a weight on one end that's used to show how straight the walls of a building are. It hangs down and centers up and shows you the level nature or lack of levelness of the structure. And though some of the language seems a bit obscure to us in this passage, the meaning seems obvious. Though many or most looked upon the small building of an effort to rebuild the temple and considered it to be inconsequential or worthless, a prophetic statement God made was that he said he rejoiced, past tense, speaking of a future act, to see the final product. At this point, only the foundation had been laid. And clearly some had considered the efforts to be trivial or insignificant. And so in verse 10, again, God warns, who dares despise the day of small things? In John 7, verse 24, the Lord has taught us to judge with righteous judgment rather than on the basis of appearance. It is foolish to judge the value of things by their size alone, because some of the best and most important things in life are small. They are little. When you think of your car, do you consider the fact that the car is of no use without the key? A massive piece of electrical equipment is entirely worthless without the little plug at the end of the cord. Remember James' illustration about a huge ship being controlled by a tiny little rudder and the powerful horse being controlled by a tiny bit in his mouth? I've entitled this lesson, Micro Investing. Micro investing is a new trend, one website says, that allows one to save in small amounts away from traditional banks and brokerages. Best of all, it allows for very small amounts to be invested, for example, a dollar. In view of the fact that one micro investing app is called Acorn, it's easy to see that micro investing recognizes that even very small contributions can grow into large benefits. In Matthew 13, verses 31 and 32, we're told that Jesus spoke another parable to the people, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all the seeds, but when it is grown, it is greater than the herbs, and it becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches." That is to say that many things which have small beginnings end up growing into or yielding tremendous results. There are many important things, many significant things in life, which we treat as inconsequential and worthless. And one of those things commonly treated this way is children. Tyrants have long realized how easily young people can be molded and led to become whatever they are trained to be. This is why those of a certain political bent, those who are given to tyranny, know that taking over the educational system in a country can yield masses of devoted disciples to their given cause. Hitler realized how important young people were, how impressionable they are. He placed emphasis on educating, molding, training, shaping, brainwashing them when they were young. In the early 1920s, the Nazi Party established a youth movement with the aim of attracting young men who could be trained to become members of the stormtroopers. In July of 1926, the group was renamed the Hitler Youth. They wore uniforms, they attended meetings and rallies where they were indoctrinated with Nazi views. The following quote has been attributed to St. Francis Xavier and to Aristotle, so I don't know to whom it really belongs, but it makes a valid point. You've probably heard it before. "Give me a child until he is seven, and I will show you the man." This acknowledges that the early years of a child's life are crucial in forming what the child will become for the rest of his life. Deuteronomy 6, this is not a foreign concept to the Bible. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 and 7 says, "These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up." Proverbs 22, verse 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." The New International Version says, "Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it." Children clearly come with their own unique disposition, with their own attitude. But children are very malleable. They are very pliant, to such a degree that it's safe to say that with rare exceptions, by the time a child is 5 to 7 years old, relatively speaking, they are what their parents have made them to be. Timothy was what he was as an adult, at least in large part because of how he was trained as a child. In 2 Timothy 1, 5, Paul told Timothy, "I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice." And in chapter 3, verses 14 and 15 of that same letter, he says, "You must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures." Little people are not little in importance, at least as far as the Lord is concerned. Two occasions recorded in the Gospels underscore this. Matthew 19, verses 13 through 15, we're told, "People brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, but the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven, belongs to such as these.' When he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there." Matthew 18, verses 1 through 5, we're told, "At the time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, 'Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?' The text says he called a little child to him and placed the child among them and said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become as little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." How seriously do we take the spiritual welfare of little children? How important to us are their questions, their prayers, their consciences? These things cannot be dismissed as unimportant. Small acts or deeds of kindness are often downplayed or even ridiculed. If you can't do something big, just don't do it at all, we're told. In Acts chapter 10, Peter tells us that the Lord himself went around doing good. And not all of that was teaching. Though there was certainly a reason for the miracles other than just helping people, it is not irrelevant that most of Jesus' miracles were aimed at helping others. Feeding people, restoring sight to the blind, curing leprosy, enabling the lame to walk. The Lord is pleased with small acts of kindness. Doing little things to help others is not insignificant. In Matthew 10:42, Jesus said, "If anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward." In Matthew 25, verses 34 through 40, Jesus anticipates the judgment day, and he addresses the significance of seemingly small acts. He says, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?' The king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" I'm not talking about doing things that enable and support those who are unwilling to work, those who take advantage of others. But with that caveat in mind, there's no deed of kindness that is not worth doing. Words. Words are such small, seemingly insignificant things. Some people act as if it's simply not important what you say to others, perhaps even how you say it to others. But words can be used for great harm. They can be used for great benefit. Not many things are more distasteful than insincere flattery. But a genuine compliment is something entirely different. I forget who said it, and I simply couldn't find it on the internet. Believe that or not, but someone notable once said something to the effect, "I can go for a whole month on a single genuine compliment." Proverbs 15, verses 1 and 4. "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." Verse 4, "The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit." The person speaks foolishness who says, "Mere words, my friend, mere words." Words are not as mere as some might think. To revise an old expression, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may break my heart." First 12 verses of James chapter 3 impresses upon us the importance of the tongue, of the potential impact of our words, especially regarding the power to destroy and to bring harm. In Matthew chapter 12 and verse 36, Jesus makes it clear that idle or empty words are not trivial. They are not insignificant. Idle words, empty words, are not inconsequential. Verse 36 of Matthew 12 says, I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every idle or empty word they have spoken. Leo Biscaglia once said, too often we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. We need to be aware of the power of words to do good, and we need to be cautious regarding the power of words to do evil and to bring harm. We're seriously mistaken when we pass by opportunities to talk to someone about the Bible, to ask a Bible-related question or to make a Bible-related comment, even in common conversation. You never know what it might produce. It might present an opportunity to teach somebody the gospel. In the Lord's work, it is certainly true that if we take care of the little things, God will take care of the big things. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, regarding his efforts in the Lord's kingdom, Paul said that he had planted, which is a simple act, simple little act to do a little planting. He said Apollos had watered. That's a simple little act, but it was God who gave the increase. A single simple question asked of the Ethiopian eunuch, do you understand what you are reading? And only God knows the impact that this man had on so many others as a result of being asked that question. When you open a door to talk to someone about the gospel, when you take advantage of an opportunity to discuss spiritual things with an unbeliever, you have no idea what kind of change you might make in their life, and then what kind of change they may make in the lives of countless others. It is not a small thing. In our age of microtechnology with computers and all things electronic getting smaller and smaller, perhaps small things are beginning to get some of the recognition they've always deserved, but it's been a long time coming. Again, Zechariah asks, who has despised the day of small things? We tend to think that the odds favor the bigger guy in the ring, the bigger guys on the football field, the taller guys on the basketball field. But many times this principle has been proven wrong. David and Goliath, Gideon's 300 men, England's smaller and faster ships defeating the massive Spanish Armada in 1588, and many other examples too numerous to mention. We need to be assured that in the Lord's work, nothing, no matter how small and seemingly insignificant, nothing done in His name is without importance. Luke 16:10, Jesus said, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is also unjust in what is much. 1 Corinthians 15:58, Paul said, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Let's recognize the benefits of micro-investing in children, in good deeds, in good and beneficial words, and in efforts to teach the lost. The Lord simply does not require greater steps than we can take. He only requires small steps taken in faith. our problem is often not our inability to take the giant step. Our problem is usually our unwillingness to take the small step.